You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky want to let you know that today's episode brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment coming up later in the episode. Want to let you know that tomorrow, Andy, Damon Rangula, Lakers Twitter favorite, is going to be joining the show. That's going to be a ton of fun. We'll talk to him following game two of the NBA Finals and catch up on all the Lakers stuff. Spotify Green Room, Friday, noon Pacific. And I want to let everybody know, remind people to subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube. We're making some progress here, Andy, the station. It's not really a station. It's a channel, but it's building up pretty quick. So we thank everybody for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We put out a call to try to get ourselves over 500 subscribers, which is basically more than double over the last month what we had. You guys came through and then some. We are now trying to get towards 600. We always appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So lots to cover today. We're going to do a little bit of a mailbag-a-thon. You guys have been great about sending in questions and comments. Do it at Cam Brothers on Twitter is probably the easiest and fastest way, but KamenetskyBrothers@gmail.com. And of course, you can leave a 5-star review with a question attached to it and get your question read in a mailbag segment, as you will see in this episode. So we'll do that. And then we're going to save a little bit for the YouTube channel as well. So if you subscribe there, you'll see, you'll get a chance to see everything. But we want to start, actually, before we get to the mailbag, as is customary before every game one of a finals, Adam Silver met with the media ahead of game one. And it was kind of revelatory in two ways. I thought two big things stuck out. The first one is he basically conceded, look, the goal is to just get through this thing. We had a lot of financial interests on both sides, players and the league, that just kind of needed to get taken care of to avoid really long-term damage to the league. We sort of got through it the best as we can, and we'll know in a few years if we screwed it all up. And then the second one, he talked about injuries and admitted that, you know, the compressed schedule and the demands that mental and physical played into some of the injury issues that we saw over the course of the year. I thought both, Andy, were interesting. I'm not sure where you want to start.
Well, I mean, just the idea that he acknowledged really what all these players have been going through, you know, especially the physical and mental, or the mental side of it, the mental and emotional, I was going to say, because, mm-hmm. you know, certain things that they did this season, in particular having the All-Star game, when the players seemed very much under the impression at the beginning of the season that that wasn't going to happen. And like mm-hmm. we talked about a lot during that period, the biggest issue wasn't just, it wasn't really the idea of risking injury. Injuries don't take place because I think most guys understand that they are here just to entertain the folks. And there's a certain understanding about what you do and what you yes. don't do. And like you said, people are pacing themselves. But from a mental standpoint, everybody needed a break. LeBron, as he is often want to do, made it perfectly clear. I don't like this at all. Like, I'm going to mm-hmm. be there, but I'm giving double middle fingers while I'm there through my body language, which I think was accomplished. And, you know, there are things that they're going to look back on when they have more information, whether this summer, when you take a look at what may end up happening with the Olympics, that they planned a lot of the calendar around for the NBA players to be showcased in, and they're dealing with a new outbreak. Right,
if you missed the news on Wednesday, a state of emergency was announced in Japan. Yeah. So there's a strong likelihood that the games could be played under some sort of state of emergency. I don't know entirely what that means. It is not, I guess, out of the question that, you know, if things got really bad, that the games themselves could be canceled, which would, right. I think, to what your point, would be kind of ironic.
Well, especially because, I mean, that was the biggest thing, that when they planned this calendar, I was like, that's a mistake. You've got to let something go. That, to mm-hmm. me, felt like the most obvious thing to go. And, you know, but the full impact of all of this, really, we're not going to know for a few years. I mean, whether you're talking about the overall economic impact and the ability to truly get back whole, you know, the impact of one or two seasons that have been everywhere from disjointed to a slog to watch, what that does for the future ratings and interest in the league, and also just the residual effect of playing two grind seasons in a row with, you know, another not as short, but shortened off season coming. What is the full effect of all this? We're not going to know for a few years.
Yeah, I think it was smart. I mean, Adam Silver, certainly took more criticism than he typically does over the course of this season. He's a guy who is generally seen, I think, as an excellent commissioner. I think rightly so. But people, especially given, you know, the sacrifices, financial sacrifices that people made, the physical sacrifices, you know, the 600,000 plus people that died in the U.S., since the beginning of this pandemic, people are certainly less moved, I will say, by the financial arguments and the financial considerations of people who are already wealthy. And, you know, it's a wealthy league run by wealthy people with wealthy players in it. And so I think, you know, particularly when it comes to the league and the owners, the idea that the league was playing for money and in part, you know, a lot of things motivated
as opposed
by
to all the other years where they were playing for the art.
Sure, but there's less danger. You know, there's no, you know, it's just the wear is different. The context makes a huge difference here. But you know, the All-Star Game, I think, is the best example of that, of this thing that was purely being played to satisfy the network obligations that they had. And so, yeah, you know, people's tolerance for that thing, I've said 100 times, I don't know if there's a better alternative. All right, so they should have only played 50 games. Okay. They play 50 games, then the players are going to give up, you know, however much, you know, another 20 something games worth of revenue and the, you know, the BRI and all these things that they have to negotiate. You know, real income goes down for these franchises.
And the ripple effect too, for different elements and financial aspects that are attached to the league that have nothing directly to do with the players. You're talking about arena workers. If there's only a certain amount of games, certain amount of revenue, there are going to be jobs lost there. There's going to be jobs.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody was real. I don't think those were front and center considerations, but they matter.
They do matter. The only reason I bring that up is because that stuff does become a part of this, and I think gets overlooked because everybody focuses purely on the financial incentives of the players.
We're two people whose jobs were directly affected in multiple ways.
Yes,
in terms of how much we work, where we work, and who we work for. Based, you know, not at all. And we, you know, in a lot of ways, we're more fortunate than other people were. So. I think it's been, and then, and, you know, obviously from a Lakers fan's perspective, you know, the part about the injuries and Adam Silver kind of understanding what that is, it's, I guess if you're a Lakers fan, you kind of just roll your eyes and be like, great, thanks for saying it out loud. But it's also smart for him to do this because, you know, the league and the players need, you know, they're gonna have to sit down, figure out a lot of stuff over the next year or two. Because while Silver made it clear, it wasn't as bad as it could have been in terms of lost revenue, in terms of all these other things. It was still bad. It was still very bad.
I also thought it was interesting.
It's going to have an impact down the road.
I also thought it was interesting really quickly when Chris Paul talked before game one, and he's the president of the Players Association, and in so many words said, look, players had plenty of opportunities to speak up during this process, let their thoughts be heard, and eventually we took a vote on this thing and we ended up going in the direction that was voted upon. There was a bit of a, look, Bron, I know we're boys, we're tight, shut the F up in terms of LeBron's tweet from about a month ago, you know, saying, I told you all this was going to happen.
Yeah. Because
LeBron did not have a massive voice. Last I checked, he was the vice president of the Players Association.
Right, and LeBron giving up 20 million, you know, LeBron giving up 20%, 30%, 40% of his salary is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but that matters a lot less to him than the extra 20 something games matters to a guy who's hanging on to the league, you know, on minimum contracts and exceptions and all these other things. And like, so I get it. And I'm really not critical. I think everybody, I do genuinely believe, and Adam Silver said this, that everybody kind of did the best they could. And if you accept, as I do, the basic premise of that why they want to try to play, why the owners want to try to play, why the league wanted to try to stage as many games as possible, and why the players wanted to do the same, I don't have a problem with it. It's a crappy situation for everyone. It was a pandemic. Yeah. I think everybody did the best they could. All right, let's open up the mailbag. Tons of free agency and off-season related questions coming up. You guys sent in, we'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Michelob Ultra, and it is time, Brian, for the Michelob Ultra moment. And I could talk about Chris Paul with an NBA Finals debut for the ages in Tuesday's Game 1 victory by Phoenix. I could talk about Giannis just getting on the court for Game 1 of the Finals after that knee injury. But instead, Brian, I'm going to talk about Andre Drummond on Twitter. Tuesday, he had an absolute field day on social. It began to a reaction off Twitter to a picture that he had posted of himself, and somebody said to him, "I wish you could only dominate in the paint like hashtag Lopez, hashtag Ayton, like for real," with a frowny emoji. Drummond responded, "Tell y'all, coach, play me more, and I could," which created an absolute field day on Twitter of people responding. Clearly, Andre Drummond is somebody with notifications on Twitter, and he tweeted out, "Now that I have your attention, NFT drops July 9th. Click the link in my bio." Then he tweeted out Kareem Abdul-Drummond. Then he tweeted out photos of...
with a t-shirt, by the way.
Yes, yeah. T-shirts with him on them, and it says Kareem Abdul-Drummond. Then three crying emojis. "I love the internet. Thank you for keeping me entertained this afternoon," followed by prayer hands emojis, crying emojis, and then he tweeted out Suns in 4. Now that, Brian, is the joy and passion anybody would want from an NBA player on Twitter. Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Joy on the court, on Twitter, in life, creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the only game.
I basically went in that over the course of the day from, "Oh my God, Andre Drummond, F that guy. He's a," to, "Oh my God, Andre Drummond, they have to give him the max."
Yeah. Like, oh, me too.
His performance on Twitter on Wednesday was superlative. And so I think that was well earned. Yep. All right, let's get into the mailbag, Andy. Lots of great stuff to cover today. Thank you guys for sending all of the questions in. Again, at Cam Brothers on Twitter, CamineskiBrothers@gmail.com. And then obviously with a 5-star review, you are guaranteed to have your question responded to.
Absolutely. 5-star
review on iTunes.
Again, so, you can crap on us all you want. Oh yeah. If you leave a 5-star review on the show page, we will read it.
We will.
Algorithms.
That's right. This one, we'll start with this one because it's kind of a framer of really the entire conversation that we're going to have between now and the end of free agency. This comes from Kat Lynn, at Vision to Kat. "Will Pelinka," meaning Rob Pelinka, "make a bunch of moves or run this team back? Which do you side with?"
Well, I mean, I side with making a bunch of moves where possible. It gives you the most options. I don't know if there will ultimately be a side that you can take, because there's going to be limitations in a lot of way with either approach. Like Rob Pelinka, unless he really does some outstanding exec work, and he has, in our estimation, done it in the past before, so I'm not going to count it out, but he's got a tough job this offseason. He does not have a lot of flexibility to do it with.
Yeah, I think where obviously you're not going to see a lot of movement at the top of the roster. It's still going to be a LeBron AD team. I think that, you know, a lot of the core of, you know, KCP, I think, will be back, and all that. So but the depth on this team, I don't think they're going to run it back. I don't think you're going to see Markieff Morris. I don't think you're going to see some of those guys who are kind of the, you know, 6-8, 5-8. And I think there could be a trade. I think they will try hard to maybe move Kuzma, maybe move KCP as well. And the big thing, Andy, is whether or not they bring back Schroeder, because if you don't, that creates a huge ripple effect. How much they're able to re-sign their own guys, Schroeder, KCP, Caruso. If they're not able to do that, that has a huge ripple effect on the roster. So I think, you know, they got to run it back with the people that they can control, but those that are on the 1-year deals, Wes Matthews, Markieff Morris, players like that, I do not expect to be back. And I do think they need to do a better job building up depth. Like, they need better depth this year than they had last year.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. It's difficult to know exactly how that depth would have held up in the playoffs because the injuries just threw everything for a loop in the second half of the season. You know,
but
they
overall,
had looked pretty good.
Wes Matthews didn't play great over the course of the season. He looked like he was coming around at the end, got a little better.
I will say, man,
Markieff Morris was not good.
I'll call my shot now. I think he's going to be back.
Wes?
Yep. We shall see.
Possible.
But I think he's going to be. I think it's totally possible. If I had to pick any of the one-year deal guys to predict he'll be back, I'm picking Wes Matthews pretty strongly. But we'll see. Next one from Purple and Gold at Lakers in My Blood. What's a realistic, quote, successful summer for the Lakers? JaVale, Danny Green, Wes back on minimum deals, re-sign Caruso and THT, trade Kuzma for Ingles, Lowry signs at the exception level. Let's just state what might be the obvious. All of those things, that is an extremely unrealistic, successful summer.
Let's start with the last part of it. Kyle Lowry signs at the exception level. No.
I mean,
I don't see that happening.
Well, people need to realize, too, the odds do not favor the Lakers getting the full mid-level, as is my understanding, unless some really unusual debt clearing goes on. So at that point, you're talking about Kyle Lowry signing for like $6 million. If they manage to get a player at Lowry's status, signing at the exception level, that is a massive win.
This is why Schroeder matters. You know, a Kuzma deal, Joe Ingles, I don't know if that's a realistic target, but a Joe Ingles level player is. And we talked about this on Wednesday's show. What you can get for Kuzma isn't somebody who like a great player because somebody expects Kuz to kind of blow up at this point and turn into something transformative for another team. It's not going to happen that way, I don't think. But what you can get is like, Kuz does this for us. He's a, you know, turned into a decent defender. He's a little younger. He's a little checks some boxes for a team, and they can send a player back who is flawed, whether that is a guy like Joe Ingles who has some shortcomings. Again, not Joe Ingles literally, because I think he's too valuable for Utah.
I was going to say, I think he's better than Kuzma.
He's much better than Kuz. But a guy who you can look at and say, you know, he's a good player, but he doesn't do these two things that we need well enough. And so we're going to swap that out. That's what you're going to end up getting. But I think if you can re-sign Caruso and THT, to Purple and Gold's point, I think that's critical. If you can bring back some combination of whether it's Wes, I think Danny Green actually might get a look from the Lakers. I think Dwight Howard could get a look from the Lakers. I think JaVale will get a look from the Lakers over the course of the offseason. If you can improve the depth at the back end of the roster, you know, 8 through 12, and keep your own free agents, that's a successful summer to me.
Today on the Road to the Finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is, as always, brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at 2.6 carbs, 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little more this season.
One more. This one from Jim Joes, who sent us questions before at KamenetskyBrothers@gmail.com. That's the that's our Gmail account. I like this one. Assuming Drummond and Dennis leave, should the Lakers start Kuzma and allow LeBron to go back to the point guard full time? And in a sense, make LeBron a third scoring option, at least during the regular season. The idea being you kind of let LeBron rest. You take some of the load away from him and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the presumption in this question is that Kuzma would be that second option. And I just don't think he's good enough to do that. Like, I understand what Jim Joes is saying, that asking LeBron to score 25 a night, play, make, defend at a high level during his 19th season sounds taxing, but you still need the right person to do that. I don't think Kuzma is capable of being on a contending team, the number two option. Plus, you would also
not in a way that would meaningfully take scoring loads away from LeBron.
Right. And plus, you would also be asking Kuzma to change his role yet again. Like, at some point, the guy has to be consistently utilized beyond the fact that I just don't think he's capable of doing that. But if you wanted to try to go in that type of direction, they'd need to find like a viable second option guy. Maybe that's where the rumors about DeMar DeRozan and the Lakers come in. Like, he's not perfect. He certainly doesn't address the outside shooting issues, but he can absolutely score.
And by the way, the play is turned into an excellent playmate.
Just about to say that.
Bring in DeRozan, you create major floor spacing issues. There's no question about that. But then, you know, maybe it's balanced with a Doug McDermott type shooter or whatever it is. Anyway, they have combinations there. But ironically, you know, the beginning of this question, assuming Drummond and Dennis leave, really what you're looking for, if you really want to take the scoring load off of LeBron and leave it on AD and this mystery third person, you need to find somebody who kind of scores like Dennis Schroeder does. But I agree. I think they'll find ways to take the pressure off of LeBron over the course of the season, and he'll play make his way through stuff. And I'm not worried about LeBron conserving his own energy. Let's keep going on the mailbag. We got questions about the coaching staff, about what the Lakers could teach other teams around town. We'll do all of that next. First, I want to tell you that this episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock everything that you need. And you sit there and you get all the questions like, is your Honda Odyssey an LX or an EX or an EXL or whatever it is? Mine's an EXL. And you wait and the person behind the counter orders the part. And then they say, oh yeah, we only have this brand. We thought we had this other one. And now all of a sudden you're paying more than you thought you were going to, because that's the part that the guy wants to sell you. I got a computer in my pocket. I got a computer at home. I have rockauto.com, and they can do all this stuff for me. So why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? You know, $353 for a fuel pump for my Odyssey at a local chain store, $216 at rockauto.com. That's way better, Andy. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Continuing on with the mailbag, this one comes from the show page, Chill B at CNT Nation. Again, reminder, if you leave a five-star review on the iTunes show page, we will read your question in your comment. It doesn't even
matter right,
if it's complimentary. We prefer it, but it doesn't matter.
I don't care.
Algorithms, five stars. That's what we want. What up? Love the show. How do you guys value Phil Handy as an assistant? I'm nervous Jason Kidd might take him to Dallas with him. Should I be concerned he won't be in purple and gold? Yeah, that would suck. Phil Handy is an incredibly well-respected guy, both around the league, certainly, Andy, and certainly inside the Lakers locker room. He has LeBron's respect. He has the organization's respect. He is a guy who is seen as somebody who has worked his way up as a player development guy with great connections to guys around the league. I mean, he would be a major loss, I think, for the Lakers were he to leave and go with Jason Kidd.
Yeah, to answer Chilby's question, I value him a lot because I know that players value him a lot, and in particular, star players. And when you look at Phil Handy's history in the league, which actually began with the Lakers when Mike Brown was hired, you're talking about a guy who's had great relationships with star players that go from Kobe to Pau Gasol, Steve Nash, to LeBron in Cleveland. Kyrie Irving's raved about him. He went to Toronto for part of that championship team. He's credited with doing a lot of development for Kawhi Leonard as a ball handler and more of a playmaker. And then he's back with the Lakers again. And like you said, we know that LeBron thinks the world of him. And because they're often on the same page, I'm going to assume that Anthony Davis thinks the world of Phil Handy as well. It feels like it would be a massive loss in terms of the culture with the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And just, you always want, when you've got a guy like LeBron, who is pretty well established for being mercurial with coaches, I think the more that you have on a coaching staff that he believes in, the better off you are.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a pretty good judge of this sort of thing, so I'll take his word for it. All right, this one comes from Miko at M1KKO, which when you write it out, looks like Miko. From Twitter, if Stan Kroenke hired you to elevate the Rams to the Lakers level, Dodgers Lakers level of fandom and respect, what moves are you making? He's talking about sponsorships, projects, football moves, etc. Here's the thing about that. You can't force it. You can't replicate the Lakers template in a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. The first thing is winning. The biggest reason that the Lakers have become such an institution in the city is because they win, and they win a lot. And so in that regard, I actually think the Rams are doing really well, because every year, Andy, they put a competitive product on the field, or at the very least look like they're trying really damn hard to put a competitive product on the field. The second thing is be entertaining. And, you know, the Lakers didn't just win. They won with showtime. So I would say if the Rams can develop an identity of how they're going to play, and for a little while it seemed like they had that with Sean McVay and that offense and putting up points, and maybe it comes back this year with Matt Stafford. So win a lot, have some personality. And then the other thing I would copy from the Lakers is, how do you treat your city? How do you treat your stars? How do you treat your fans? And in that regard, the Lakers have always been spot on perfect. They know how to put on an event better than anybody. You know, that ring ceremony we saw this year under like horrible circumstances, trying to figure out how to make that cool with nobody there was awesome. That stuff, like, the Lakers are spot on with that stuff. So those are the things that I would try to do, with the understanding that it's going to take time and it is all predicated on winning.
Yeah, it's definitely going to take time. And what you can't do is try to steamroll the process through a lot of flashiness, or, you know, you want to make the effort, but you don't want to look like you're efforting. And if you want an example, look at the previous 2 years with the Clippers and, the street lights, not spotlights, earn, not given, or whatever the hell those billboards
Shut
were,
up.
Which were directly going at the Lakers. And it really blew up in their faces, you know, not just because they didn't win a championship, but because they were a premier free agent destination that two star players forced themselves to. You are no longer the little engine that could at that point. And it was silly.
And to their credit, the Rams do not pretend after they move into their $17 billion stadium and all that stuff that they are a little engine that could.
Sure.
That,
but I'm just saying, you have to put in the effort, but the effort has to be organic, and it can't feel like you're telling people how to feel about your team. You just want to make them feel a certain way.
Absolutely. All right, last one. I thought this one was really interesting. This comes from Jose Furlan at Don Furleone, which I think is a fantastic
name, is excellent
as a Twitter handle. I watched Chinatown, the movie, the great Jack Nicholson classic. I get why people think it's one of the best movies of all time. It was boring. Thoughts on the movie, and less thoughts on Chinatown. But the thing that I thought was interesting about this is, great movies, Andy, that everyone thinks, like, sort of are universally thought of as great, that you don't like. Jose Furlan does not like Chinatown. Thought it was boring. Are there Chinatowns in your world?
I
think it's a good movie.
Yeah, I think Chinatown's a really good movie. As far as movies, though, and I gave this a little bit of thought, not too much, because I will allow myself to go down too deep a rabbit hole. For movies that got tons of either praise or tons of audience applause that I just did not like at all, my go-to example for this has always been American Beauty. My immediate reaction to seeing this in 1999 was, this was overrated and really bad. Then after all the Oscar nominations and hoopla, I went to the theater and saw it again just to make sure I wasn't missing something. I liked it even less, Brian.
It doesn't hold up. And I will say, I liked it originally. Just even the second time I saw it closer, eating around, it does not hold up.
No, I mean, obviously the world has understandably soured on Kevin Spacey, which I think has led to American Beauty getting soured on.
The world soured on Mel Gibson too, and Braveheart is still a damn awesome movie.
Yeah, it's just, I never thought it was a good movie, and I was way ahead of the curve on that one. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, I don't get this movie. It is badly acted, a lot of mugging. The script is terrible, just broad stereotypes that don't even offend me. Like, they're boring.
They offend me in their laziness, not in their depiction.
Like, I would always hear from people, I can see my family in it. They remind me of my family, even if it's a different heritage. Like, you know what?
Right, because it's a boilerplate of every single family everywhere.
Well, I'm just like, great, your family sucks in ways that transcends geopolitical and cultural boundaries. Congratulations on that. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. That movie is an effing mess. It has no idea what it wants to be, what it wants to say about small town America or race or anything. Sam Rockwell, I actually thought, and I like him, I thought he's pretty bad. I didn't find him believable at all as a bullying, menacing sheriff. Love Frances McDormand, but her role doesn't make sense. People think it's a hard-hitting movie, or they treat it at a time that raise tough questions and observations. It does not. If people want a recent movie in a similar setting that actually pulls that off, Hell or High Water, great movie. That is a fantastic movie with a lot of the same themes, but better. And then finally, Brian, Dunkirk. Too many British actors who all look exactly the same while in flight gear and face mask with their voices muffled.
Right, with a timeline that is all over the day.
Yeah, I had no idea which character was which. I didn't care. There's no story. It's incredible editing and use of music, but I got bored of it quickly. 1917, which came out a couple years later, World War I setting, way better storytelling. Incredible technique, too, with basically looked like one big unbroken shot. Somehow made less money than Dunkirk. That was an outrage.
Yeah, those are all really good candidates. I liked Three Billboards a little more than you did, although it is, from a story standpoint, definitely problematic. My best example of like one of these deals, and I think this was more critic-driven than people-driven, I could not finish The Irishman. I tried a bunch of times to finish that movie, and maybe it was the pandemic. Maybe it was the fact that, you know, most movies are not meant to be, you know, like watched in installments on your phone, but like, I just couldn't get through it.
I'm pretty sure that's how Scorsese intended it.
He seems like the type of guy who'd lean into that. That's like really long that people will watch on their phone.
Yeah.
During a pandemic.
Yeah.
Possibly on the toilet. Like that is how I envision people taking this in. So there's that.
It's okay.
Lawrence of Arabia kind of drags, but that's, you know, that's a whole other deal. All right. So thank you for everybody for sending in all of these questions. Reminder, sign up for Locked On Lakers on YouTube, where we will be doing one more question as like a little bonus for the mailbag. That'll go straight to the channel. Spotify Green Room noon on Friday. And Dom and Rangula joining us tomorrow. So a lot of stuff still to go on Locked On Lakers. See everybody next time.